So that was interesting.
It was a pretty interesting game. Heart attack inducing. Very interesting at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, that was not a good defensive game.
We can just jump in and start talking about it. This is the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper, as usual. Special post-game podcast, just Cincinnati's 66-64 win over SMU. A game UC dominated the first half. They had a 16-0 run right in the middle segments of the first half. Gave them a lot of cushion, and then SMU came roaring back down the stretch, but didn't have enough to finish the game. Somehow, some way, they were very unlucky in the shots that they missed, and Cincinnati was very lucky that the three-pointer rimmed out, because, oh my god, how did that not fall?
Karma. Lots of karma built up over years of soul-crushing disappointment.
That had to be it. Like, all the games last year where they just lost heartbreaking fashion, like, they finally got one back this year.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I mean, that's fine. We picked up one of them. We're owed, like, 40, so...
And SMU, another team who just, like, gets that terrible ways of losing label attached to them with their famous NCAA tournament loss that people still reference, even though it happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was one of the all-timer... That was an all-timer of just a nut punch.
So, a lot to break down in this one. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the positives, the end, the negatives? Where do you feel like jumping off at?
It's for all that happened in that game, I want to start with a really weird spot, which was Jerron Cumberland getting like 7-8 minutes of run when it mattered. And coming up with an enormous three-point shot from nothing that was just, like, terrible offense, but it went in. You know, we've been wondering whether or not he would have a bigger role in this offense going down the stretch of the year, because it's obvious that he has talent. It's obvious that he has a role to play on this team. And I think that is ultimately going to be... excuse me. That's going to be UC's best five, will be Troy, Jacob Evans, Cumberland, Gary, and Kyle Washington. I think that is the best five, and that includes all the defensive foibles of Kyle Washington and Cumberland. Because the funny thing about the Cumberland stretch was he hit that three, and I think it was literally the next play. He, like, meandered into a double team on the opposite block and didn't even bother to rotate back to his dude, and his dude hit a wide open corner three that cut it down to, I think it was a 2-point lead at that point. I mean, that's the Jerron Cumberland experience this year. You know, he'll get better on defense, but whew.
And that one, it was hard to tell if that was on him or Gary Clark. It's like rewinding it back. It's hard to tell if UC was playing zone. Kind of looked like they were playing zone. And like,
yes, but if you're playing zone, you don't have the guy on the right base double in the paint. And not even like double on the block, like double on the opposite block.
They did that. They made that mistake so many times. Like, they would just like leave whoever it was in the corner. It was kind of mind-blowing. Cincinnati normally does not give up a lot of corner looks from three. And let's see, SMU took 23 three-point shots. It seemed like 10 of them were corner threes that were generally open, which was kind of surprising. And by the time they started falling in was when they made their big second-half run. And whatever Brown threw up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... But you are right on that. I mean, like, for the most part, if they're giving up an open look from three, it's above the break, generally. Or at least it has been recently, because this was a problem in the first let's say 10 games of last year too. You know, I went to the Bowling Green game and they gave up just a parade of wide open corner threes to the Falcons. Luckily it was Bowling Green and they can't shoot, so it didn't really matter. But the fact that they were turning up those looks with such regularity was a problem. And they kind of fixed that problem down the stretch of last year, but it was back with a vengeance tonight.
We can get into that in a bit. So let's throw some positive out to start it. Gary Clark with a dominant effort. 18 points, 8-9 shooting, 2-3 from 3. They had a couple assists. Didn't get credited with a turnover. Really the anchor of the second half. He scored 12 points, 5-5 shooting in the second half. Really carried UC through the beginning stretch, which turned out to be pretty pivotal because SMU answered UC's run with a little run of their own to start the second half. The very long stretch of play where they took it from, I believe, like, what, the 17.5-minute mark all the way down to the, like, 11:59 mark. You normally don't see play run that long, and give credit to the guys on the floor for playing clean basketball, but Gary Clark really stood out, and that was a huge stretch for the UC offense, which kind of fell in the tank for the rest of the game after that.
Well, yeah, they fell in the tank for the rest of the game after that because they went back to doing the same shit that hasn't worked. Playing way too slow. No ball movement. No man movement. Troy Copain doing pull-up three-pointers. It's like, we have conclusive evidence that this stuff is low-outcome basketball, but we're just going to keep running this back. Because when pressure gets high, like, this is all we know, so this is what we do, even though it sucks and everybody knows it. It's like, is that where we're at now? I mean, this game is... They pulled it out of their ass when they shouldn't have had to do it. That's really what it comes back to for me is... Like, they were phenomenal on offense, except for the last 10 minutes of the game, which are always the most important 10 minutes of a game.
As you mentioned, they did get to more stagnant basketball where, like, Troy would just stand up top, dribble for, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds, Troy or Evans. And then they would, like, run into possessions where... You have Kevin Johnson throwing up a three with, like, the final 2 minutes. That really turned into an SMU basket on the other end. Just a terrible shot. Like, you, not to throw Kevin Johnson under the bus because he had to shoot it. But, like, in situations like that, like, Copain can't give up the ball. Like, he played such a very solid game. Where, like, his, like, little flaws like that, where, like, he, like, controls the game for 35 minutes. In the last 5 minutes... It kind of, like, slipped back into some bad habits. Like, he himself just, like, pounds nails for 8 seconds, then shoots a three off the bounce. When in the most of the game, he was getting a lot of catch-and-look threes, and he nailed pretty much almost all of them. Even the ones he missed would just rattle out. And it was, like, the ones he just stood there were the ones that didn't go in. Like, finished with 16-7, 6 assists, no turnovers in 37 minutes. Solid effort, but... Like, down the stretch, you'd like to see him, like, tighten it up a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it seems to be, like, we keep referencing his sophomore season where he shot 40% from three in conference. And, you know, like, what we keep neglecting when we discuss this is the reason he shot such a high percentage in conference play from three of that year is that that was the year that Farad Cobb joined the team and they had a second ball handler and they moved Troy off the ball. Like, that was the key because he catch and shoot, he's fine, he's money. It's when he has to, it's off the dribble where he has problems with the shot. Because off the dribble, his footwork is... Erratic does not do it justice. It's like, to have a consistent jump shot, whether it's catch and shoot or off the dribble, like, your last two steps and your jump have to be the same every single time. That's the only way you can have consistency. With Troy, every shot is different. Like, some shots are set shots. Some shots are, he's got a little bounce to it. but like you want all your shots to look the same. Like, there's a reason they call things textbook, because it looks the same every time.
Exactly. It's a pretty, like, if you did a just shot by shot breakdown, it seems of the ones where he has catching and shooting off a pass to where he's dribbling and putting it up. It's like footwork and his, I don't know, his like follow through doesn't look the same. Speaking of, let's talk about a little bit of like the negative. Like, Jacob Evans, worst game of the season offensively, did have 6 assists to 1 turnover, but 1-10, 0-3 from 3, missed a backbreaking 1-1 at the end of the game. Any thoughts on him? Like, is he playing too much, or was just an off game against guys who played very good defense against him?
Is he playing too much? Probably yes. I mean, I think all the frontline guys are playing too much. But yeah, like he didn't look the same. He didn't have the same bounce or, you know, aggressiveness to his steps that we're used to. And there is something to be said for this being a bad matchup for him, because like he really thrives in one-on-one situations where he can get past the first man and create a shot that way. Those looks like that's not really going to work against SMU because of the way they play defense. It's not a pack line defense, but even if you get by the first guy, there's always someone right there. And the second guy looks exactly like the first guy. I mean, it's just a very difficult team to play against if you are, especially for Evans's game and how he likes to attack on offense. That's just not, is that conducive for him, because he's not as good beating the help, you know, the secondary defender. He's great getting by the first guy and creating a shot that way, but he doesn't really account for that second defender very well.
And like, as you mentioned, SMU just throws tall, rangy, athletic guy after tall, rangy, athletic guy right after you time and time again. And it gave Evans a lot of fits. He's still good enough that he can contribute in other ways, which UC definitely needed. They ended up needing all 6 of his assists and what he brought to the rebounding game and the defensive end. Kind of a weird game for Kyle Washington. Like, solid offensively, 11 points, 5-7. Hit a corner 3, had 3 assists. Who knew? Kyle Washington, 3 assists? What was this? A gift from heaven?
Point forward.
But it seemed. But his problem was he was like trying to guard Ben Moore on the other end, and he did not do a very good job at keeping Moore around off the glass. It seemed like he had a lot of trouble with that assignment.
Yeah, that's accurate. That's an accurate assessment.
But SMU, like, obviously, but we talked about the other day, they kill the glass. They end up getting 36% of their misses. Just an obscene number. They kept UC off the glass. So the lowest offensive rebound total in the Mick Cronin era. UC had 4 offensive rebounds. It's kind of shocking, like, when you think about it. A Mick Cronin team just not hitting the offensive glass. But I think in large part of the defensive end is, like, Washington goes for blocks a little bit too often, and he ends up out of position. And Moore, especially, was really killing him. Like, and Brown had a very solid rebounding game, and so did Foster. But it seemed like Moore was just giving UC fit after fit, like, especially getting with the tap backs.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was always going to be the key for this game for UC, is just finishing possessions. The style that Mick likes to play, that he's adapted over these last couple of years, it's kind of the perfect style to play against a team like SMU if they don't crash the glass. And in previous years, SMU has not really done that. That's not really been something that they've done. They've had a guy or two devoted to offensive rebounding. Well, this year, like, everybody offensive rebounds. And that's why they have such obscene numbers on that particular metric. I mean, like, I think they're, for the season, they're coming in averaging, like, 37% of their misses they rebound, which is insane. And in this game, they were at 36, so it's, like, basically right at their average. It's not like they did a better than, you know, a better than normal job offensive rebounding against UC. It's just, like, this is normal. So, I mean, like, I think the one thing that I would point to is teams that do this, they struggle to defend in transition. And UC got a lot of good looks earlier in the game because they pushed in transition against, because they would have numbers. You know, if you don't commit a guy back to defend against a fast break, you're going to have problems defending against teams that want to run. And in the first half, it seemed like UC was fine playing a higher tempo and doing that. But when they get to the last 10 minutes, they reverted back to, you know, old habits die hard. They go back to doing what they've always done under Mick, which is slow it down, pound the nail for 20 seconds, and then see what happens.
Interesting to see that UC outscored in the paint 24-20. Something you really wouldn't expect to happen against SMU, a team that UC's normally, like when they've beaten SMU, they've normally just gone inside and gotten whatever they wanted. And it was a little bit different seeing, like, well, I mean, we talked about the numbers, but like, SMU did a pretty good job of keeping Clark and Washington from staying out of the paint consistently. Obviously, they blew a couple of defensive coverages, like when they left Clark wide open under the basket for dunks. Like, after that hot stretch, he didn't score again the rest of the game. Which I think you have to give credit to SMU's defense.
Yeah, but yes, you give credit to SMU's defense, but it's also like, this is, they know exactly where they're weakest, they know where UC can hurt them the most, and they're not going to let him do it. Like, they were steady committing double teams, start of the game to the end of the game, especially anytime anybody got the ball in the post. That's an effective strategy against UC, because while Gary is a good passer out of the post and is going to make the right decision 9 times out of 10, you know, we joked about Kyle Washington having 3 assists, which is a lot for him, but like, the decision making from him in those situations still isn't great. Like, the ball went up a lot when he got doubled, and some of those shots went in, which is all to the good, but like, this is something that they're going to continue to see as the season goes on, is just people putting 4 bodies in the paint and doubling Gary or Kyle every time they get the ball, every time they get a touch on the block. That's just what's going to happen. So you know it's coming. You got to come up with an adjustment. That's one thing to watch over the next couple of games, because let's be real. Like, the next 3 games should be walks. Like, they should not be close contests at all. They're playing 2 of the worst teams in the conference, and they get the return trip home with Temple. Temple is not a good team, and they should run them to the gym in Cincinnati.
And the Temple, a team they normally had great success with in Cincinnati. I believe they beat, they lost to Temple last year, but it seems like they've beat the good teams. At least the tournament team Temple had, they beat them by like 30 points in Cincinnati. One thing SMU did late was they did switch to zone, and it really surprised the Bearcats. They got so used to the man-to-man, like, switched to zone and immediately got a... Somebody came from behind and stripped Washington from the little elbow play that they love to run and have run with years with Ellison, Clark, and Czech Muj and whoever else is on the floor. Besides Cumberland, who we talked about, not really a lot from the bench. Trey Scott had 4 points. Jennifer really didn't give much, didn't play a ton. Brooks didn't do a lot in his little time. Interestingly enough, UC went with Trey Scott and Quadri Moore on the floor like at the under 16 break, which took place like 12 minutes left with a 10-point lead, and that's what SMU went to work and cut it to 4. Not saying it was on those guys in particular, but SMU definitely attacked that front line once Mick went to the bench. And seeing Quad, like, who did have a big block, seeing him like come back on the out of his bubble wrap from the bench was kind of surprising, especially for that long.
Yeah, I mean, like, really, what can Quad do? Like, is he a net positive on offense? No. Is he an atrocious defender? Yes. Does he at least stand in the right spots? No. Like, that's a head scratcher. Because at that point, I don't believe they were in like serious foul trouble with any of the bigs. They just
needed to get a blow for a few minutes. Do you think they would have used that timeout, like the 160, the back-to-back timeouts that they got? You think that that's all the rest that they would have given their bigs? But nope, they just like ran right back out there.
Yeah, and like at this point, I'd rather see Brooks get run than Quad. Like, Brooks is incredibly raw, yeah, but he has potential. He's going to be a guy who you're going to have to rely on in the next 3 years.
His problem was, like, they just took him out. He only played, what, like, 4 possessions at most. They just took out whoever his man was and ran at him.
And yeah.
Nick pulled him very quickly.
Yeah. That did happen. You know what the funniest part about the I know we already talked about Carmelo, but I just want to bring this up because it was hilarious. So about 2 minutes into Carmelo's run towards the end in crunch time, I see Kevin Johnson get up and go to the scorer's table to get in. Like a minute later, possession breaks down. They get the ball to Carmelo on the wing, jab steps twice, hits that 3. 10 seconds later, I see Kevin Johnson getting up and going back to the bench. I don't want to read too much into that, but that seemed like a metaphor.
It definitely did.
It's like, this is where we're heading. We might not get there this year, but happening.
Oh, for sure. Especially late. I think that's going to be a switch that Mick's going to make a lot more.
Yeah, and he went offense-defense, which Mick never, ever does. Especially with his guards. Like, he'll go offense-defense with big men. He's been doing that for years, but he never does it with guards. But he went offense-defense, and then he accidentally left Cumberland in for a defensive possession. He blew a read, and SMU got a good look. And then it goes right back to KJ and Trey Scott, and then the offense looks like an abomination for a possession.
At the end of the game, they got stuck with Cumberland and Washington on the floor.
Well, yeah, that was
Moore missed that 3.
Yeah, on a defensive possession, which was funny.
And Washington just got like rooted out, like almost to high up on the block. That was insane.
Yeah,
kind of fortunate that like that action didn't get a foul called on UC. It's kind of a questionable contact. It's a couple questionable calls where officials just fall for flailing, which I guess you can't really blame them, but. So it was the off-ball guy making the wrong call twice. Like, not a lot of fouls in this game, but like when they make egregious calls where you go back and watch the guy hit the ball or not do anything, it stands out. I think there was one on SMU and then one on UC. The foul on Clark was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that was... I'm going to be diplomatic. Not a foul. It was just not a foul.
Then the one where it looked like Moore or SMU's coach was going to get a tech, like he got all ball. It's just like the arms, like both arms flailed up, and the officials called the arms flailing. And it was the official behind the play who couldn't see what was happening. Which, if they got a tech there, that would have been a pretty huge swing. But speaking of huge swings, Kevin Johnson did have a nice first half. He had 9 points, trio of threes. It took a terrible shot. 8 seconds left in the half. UC has the ball with 14 seconds left. No shot clock because SMU fouled. Kevin Johnson shoots a terrible 3, comes down, Shake Milton gets a layup in his short shorts, and then makes a 7-point game going into the half, which turned out to be huge because UC needed those 2 points badly. It's just another occasion where UC blows a late half scenario, which it's like. Wreck through, like, so many years of these guys, so many years of Mick Cronin, and they blow these tabs like crazy. I don't understand sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, like, they just don't value possessions. It's like, it's hilarious how, on the one hand, Mick is so anal about turnovers, and he wants to get a good shot every time, he wants to work the ball around every single time. But at the same time, you don't mind the clock, like, ever. When was the last time you see ever, like, did a 2-for-1?
They kind of did in the first half, just because they had it with a minute left.
But they do it they do it on accident. It's like it's not intentional. It's like, oh, fuck, he shot, like, 20 seconds too soon on that possession. Oh, good, we're going to get another possession.
Yeah, so some of the inconsistencies with the guys who've played a long time just kind of going to make you shake your head. But could we harp on some of the low points? Because the second half did end with some. Overall, a huge win. 14-2, 4-0 in the league. You get your two big league wins. You only have, one more game with that. You get them both again. Never mind. You get SMU and Houston again later in the season. A good chance. Like, if you go 3-1 against those teams, you'll probably win the league. Can't really.
No, I think they're at the position now where they are clearly at the front of the pack. And like Houston and SMU have to be perfect to keep up. Can they do that? I mean, because that's the thing about this game, is they gutted out a big win against one of their biggest rivals in a game where really nothing went to plan. They had no interior game to speak of. They got dominated in the paint. Jacob Evans had his worst game, arguably his worst game as a Bearcat, because, you know, he had bad games last year, but nothing was expected of him like it was this year. And, you know, Mick has talked constantly about how this is a new thing for Jacob Evans being at the top of the scouting report. And he is at the top of the scouting report. You know, Troy is the guy who got all the preseason hype. But Jacob Evans is the best player on this team. Like, I just think he is. Like, because his ceiling is so much higher and he can do so much more. And his mentality is such. Like, if Gary Clark had Jacob Evans' mentality, Gary Clark would be an All-American, like, 2-3 times. But that's not how he's built. That's not how he's wired. So he kind of comes and goes.
It's a bit. Like, games like this are kind of a bit of a. Like, you want to see that out of Clark more. He does vanish for long stretches. If he was like the alpha dog that Evans was, I wonder how different UC would be.
Very different. I mean, they would just be a much more assertive team, generally.
With this game being final, Cincinnati did fall out of number one in defensive efficiency in conference play, behind Central Florida. Kind of a shocker.
No, it's not. Taco Fall.
So I don't think anybody thinks Central Florida's defense is really good, though.
No, but they had the 7'6" dude.
very
helps.
Very true. Yeah, the offense, 1.14 points per possession. Pretty impressive. Like, of course, like you do want to like say things like, oh, they should get to the foul line. Only 7 free throw attempts. Like, only Cumberland got to the line more than once. Kind of disappointing. They did a
pretty
good...
go ahead. And he got to the line twice because they were in the bonus. Well, no, he ran to the front of the rim and got fouled on an inbounds play.
SMU only attempted 10 free throws, which is a big improvement the second half from the first, where SMU got to the line 8 times. It was a huge reason why they stayed in the game in the first half. So they were able to get the second half shots and the free throws just to keep it relatively close. So look ahead to the rest of the league. I think we've put this one to bed. So Cincinnati stands up top 4-0. As you mentioned, so upcoming schedule is East Carolina, Temple, Tulane before you get the Xavier break. And then you come back with South Florida and maybe a tricky game at Tulsa. So Cincinnati should be at the top of the league. Who do you think the second best team is? Do you think it's clearly SMU? Or do you think it's Houston? Or maybe somebody else who has kind of got like a blah record right now?
It's one of those two teams. I think it's Houston because they're slightly better defensively. But, I mean, like, it's really a toss-up between those two teams. They're so close. I mean, their offenses are essentially identical coming out of this game. I think KenPom has them both at 115. Houston's slightly higher at 115.6 in terms of their efficiency rate. It's really a toss-up. I mean, I think SMU, their lack of depth is going to be a problem. Like, not that Houston is great shakes in that department, but they have a little bit more that they can rely on. They don't have to play the same six guys 35 minutes every night.
Yeah, SMU got nothing from their bench. McDowell barely played, missed both his free throws. Whatever his name is, number 21, plays 22 minutes. So it was 0 for 2 from 3. Doesn't really contribute much. Like, there's a heavy, heavy burden on their starters. Then when, like, Awale is, like, struggling like he did until he just went on fire late, like, they're really up against it. Like, their offense is good, and their rebounding definitely travels. Yeah, I do have some questions about SMU, especially when you get, like, later to the season when these games happen more and more, and they have to go on the road to some of these long trips back east. Looks like they kind of avoid some of them. At least, like, they're nestled with the terrible teams on their road trips. But, I don't know, I kind of think it's the second best team is Houston as well. Just because I kind of like their team a little bit more. I don't know, it's like an X factor. There's just something about them I trust a little more. And I kind of think Kelvin Sampson's done a really good job there.
Yeah, I mean, Sampson's done a good job, but, the key for Houston is SMU plays positionless basketball on offense, which is fine when it works, but they have nothing to fall back on. Like, if it doesn't work, it's just everybody going one-on-one hoisting threes. And that's fine if they go in. I mean, they have good shooters that can survive that way against some of the lesser teams on the schedule. But against the top end, that's just not going to work. I mean, you have to have a backup plan when the first option goes to shit.
Really, they're just like a more athletic, more talented Temple. They don't have like anybody as tall as Echenoya, but Temple doesn't rebound nearly as well as SMU does. And they both do fall into the habit of, nothing's happening, we'll just jack a bunch of threes. And for Temple, it's worked out a lot worse than it has for SMU, since Temple's 10-8 and 1-4 in the league. Just an atrocious start. Yeah, I don't think you could say any of Temple's four losses are really terrible. Like Cincinnati, at UCF, at SMU, at UConn. But 1-4 is really bad. Like, they'll struggle to make the NIT, I kind of think.
CBI, here they come.
We should talk about UConn real quick. Are you believing in their little turnaround, or do you think they're still garbage?
I still think they're trash.
They do get SMU next Thursday. That's the big Thursday night game. If they win at SMU, I think there's a pretty good chance that they could at least not contend for the league title, but contend for the 2 seed. They don't look like there's a ton of losses on the rest of their schedule.
Yeah, I mean,
half of it depends on how much you believe in Memphis.
I'm a convert on Dedrick Lawson. I don't know about the rest of them.
It's kind of a weird league to try to break down because there's so many question marks. So many teams that are so bad at one thing and like kind of decent at the other. It's like, what do you do when like there's one good offensive team, two decent offensive teams, and then a bunch of teams that are solid on defense, except for South Florida, who's garbage at everything.
Yeah. You want a fun stat to go out on?
Of course.
Guess who's leading the league in three-point percentage?
Is it Cincinnati?
Woo!
Solid, what were they tonight? What, 12 of 26. That'll do it for you.
That'll do, Pig. That'll do.
So, that wraps up this post-game podcast. We'll be back at you sometime next week to break down what should be a laugher against East Carolina and whatever else is happening during the week. We'll get more into the big football recruiting news. Did you see Porta and Ohio State transfer? I can't remember his name. I'm completely blanked. Horton, is that his name?
Gibson. I think that's right. I might say the first name wrong. Gibson. Let's say Gibson. Forget that I said the first one. It's fine.
Do I talk about that at all, or leave it for next week?
We'll leave it for next week.
Yeah, Torrance Gibson. So, yeah. Hey. Yeah, so we don't sound stupid.
Stupider?
Yeah, stupider. Yeah, I called him Horton. That was pretty terrible. I kind of combined none of the parts of his name together. Yeah.
It's fine. No interest.
Yeah, so this week we end on just ineptness by me. So we'll be back at some point and enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the first place Bearcats.